Hello, friends. This is Out of This World Radio with your host, Ted Marr, broadcasting from the studios of KKNW on 1150 AM here in beautiful Bellevue, Washington, just outside Seattle today. The purpose of this program is to raise consciousness and make this world a much better and much happier place. And I know that with everyone's help, we can and will make this earth a much better place. I want to thank everyone so much for making Out of This World Radio one of the most popular talk shows in the 3.1 million Seattle area, and also the fastest growing metaphysical and spiritual radio program in the world with over 100,000 listeners in over 60 countries. I also want to thank everyone so much who attended my Galactic Wisdom Conference last weekend in Olympia, Washington. It was a huge success. And from now until about 2:30 p.m., I will be discussing the conference and our plans for our conference next, another conference next year. We'll be having a conference again on March 9, 10, and 11, 2018, at the same location, Olympia, Washington, at 9101 Silicon Road Southeast. And people can register early for the conference for just $97. By the way, all the presentations were videotaped from the conference we just had. And for those of you who missed the conference, you'll be able to watch all the presentations for just $97. We also have all the videos for last year's conference as well for just $47. All the information is on the website at www.galacticwisdomconference.com. And if you have any questions, please send me an email to outoftheworld1150@gmail.com. After we just talk about the conference, we'll be talking to one of the world's most famous water scientists, a wonderful friend of mine, Professor Gerald Pollack of the University of Washington. He'll be on today from 2:30 to 3 p.m. today, and we'll be helping to celebrate World Water Day, which is tomorrow. During the second hour, from 3 p.m. to 4 p.m., Michiko Hayashi of the Emoto Peace Project is with me live here in the studios in Bellevue, Washington, and we'll also be interviewing her to celebrate World Water Day. And during the second hour, we'll be doing some prayers to help heal Fukushima. I appreciate everyone's support for this program so much, and because Out of This World Radio is a nonprofit program supported by entirely donations, and for those who'd like to donate, please go to the donate button at the upper right-hand corner of the program webpage at www.outoftheworld1150.com and just click on it. I also have a spiritual mentoring program where I teach people how to contact their angels and spirit guides, and I can put people in touch with their loved ones who've passed on or contact their guides and tell them about their soul purpose, and I think give them good advice about relationships, family matters, or a host of other things. If you're interested, please send me an email to outoftheworld1150@gmail.com, or you can call me here in the United States on my cell at 509-750-9793, or toll-free in the United States and Canada at 1-888-879-8339. With that, I want to thank everyone so much for their donations and support, especially Faison and Shirley in Florida, Caroline in England, Angela in Texas, Anita in Dublin, Ireland, Eli in Texas, my good friend Marco in Helsinki, Finland, Emma Louise and Jan Erik in Norway, Marie and Alan in Camino Island, big supporters of the Emoto Peace Project, Robert, Julia, and Louise in Bellevue, as well as Randy and Jessica, Darren in Olympia, Robert in Bellevue, Tom Frazem and Sig Sigby in Norway, David Lowe in Singapore, and Raj Shrastri in Toronto, Canada, and everyone around the world who've helped me raise consciousness and make this planet a much better place. I also would like to thank the many sponsors of this show, including Ronnie McMillan of GetTheD.com, wonderful Crystal at the Crystal Boys Bookstore in Tacoma, and the Ryan Tech Computers of Bend, Oregon. We're also looking for sponsors and advertisers for the show, and any advertising on the program will have a worldwide audience for the goods and services. And I know that with everyone's help, we can and will make this planet a much better and happier place. With that, I'd like to thank my dear friend Carol for designing my website and providing wonderful support, and my friends Michiko Hayashi, who's here with me in the studio, as well as Hiro Emoto, Dr. Emoto's son, and Mrs. Emoto, the beautiful Emoto Peace Project Emoto office in Tokyo, Japan, my friends in the Galactic Alliance who've been supporting my show, and my angelic and earthly family. And last but not least, I couldn't do my show without my wonderful producer, Eric, and my station ad manager, Eric Crema, without whose help and support I couldn't do the program. Out of This World Television is now also broadcasting three times a week on Comcast Channel 22 here in the Puget Sound area of the Seattle area on Tuesdays at 8:30 p.m., Wednesdays at 1:30 p.m., and Saturdays at 7 p.m. The programs are also available on YouTube, and now we have over 20 different programs downloaded on YouTube, and more will be coming by the end of the month. With that, I would like to ask everyone listening today to send lots of light to Michiko's mother, who suffered a stroke recently, because I know your love and prayers will really help her. Actually, I wanted to tell you, too, that Michiko Hayashi will be giving a free presentation at the wonderful Crystal Voyage Bookstore at 38th and Cedar in Tacoma, Washington, tomorrow from 5:30 p.m. to 7:30 p.m. To help celebrate World Water Day in her work. She'll also be distributing copies of her wonderful children's book, Messages from Water. I hope you all can come to her wonderful presentation. It's free, and it'll be open to the public. The conference we just concluded, it had some world-famous speakers and some of the world's best psychics and mediums. And people came from all over the world, including Sweden, Norway, Japan, Taiwan, Canada, Switzerland, the United Kingdom, Trinidad and the Caribbean, and all over the United States. We had some amazing people, including Jim Mars, who's a famous American journalist, Scott Lemriel, who's been having face-to-face and telepathic contact with members of the Galactic Alliance for the last 55 years, Simon Parks, who was with us for about an hour and a half by Skype from England. He's a famous English contactee. Tony Rodriguez, who lived for 20 years on Mars and on Ceres in the secret space program. Shirichiro Yoshinuchi, I hope that's correct, a.k.a. Mr. Yoshi. He's the world's most famous Hado and vibrational healer from Tokyo, Japan. He just flew back yesterday morning, and I know he's back in Tokyo now, and I hope he's listening today. Of course, my friend Michiko Hayashi is with me today, and with that, Michiko, welcome to Out of This World Radio.
Hi, Ted. Thank you so much for inviting me here today. It's so wonderful to be back here again. Thank you.
Wonderful, wonderful. And I want to go through our list of guests we had and then talk a little bit about each one and what they had to say, just kind of a summary. Jerry Pollack, famous water scientist, he'll be coming on actually at 2:30 today in about 20 minutes or so. He's a wonderful man and a wonderful scientist, and I can't wait to have him on. There was a new gentleman who came to my conference named Master Lin. He's a very famous psychic and medium from Taiwan with important messages for humanity. He himself said during the conference he came from a water planet and that Dr. Emoto and himself were brothers in a previous life. I really enjoyed meeting him. He will actually be interviewed on my radio show within the next week or two, and I'll also have him on my television show on March 29th in the afternoon. Other people include James McMath, the president of Pristina Water Company in New Mexico, a wonderful water company that provides very healthy water products for people. Michelle Walling, she's with 5D Radio out of Florida, came, a wonderful person. Alfred Lambert Weber came in by Skype from beautiful Vancouver, Canada. Alfred's a famous Canadian lawyer and a UFO expert, and he actually was, for those of you who don't know his background, he was appointed by President Jimmy Carter back in 1976 or 77 as the head of his UFO Disclosure Commission. And he's got an interesting story since that time. There's a reason why he lives in Canada now is because his life was threatened by certain dark elements. And so he fled to Canada, where he's living in beautiful Vancouver now. But he knows quite a bit about UFOs, and I was so happy to have him give a presentation. A new person we also brought in, came in from Norway, was Emma Louise Hansen. She's an Andromeda contactee from Norway, and she had many beautiful messages about the new Earth and how we're shifting into much higher dimensions. Of course, Billy Faye Woodard was there, and his father as well was there, Zora from the Hollow Earth, was there, and it was just fascinating. Billy was the former base commander for Area 51 in Nevada during the late 60s, and he had some amazing things to say, and I'll go into those in a few minutes. Robbie Holtz is a local person. She studied under the Australian Aborigines. Both her and her husband did, and she's now a fantastic Aboriginal healer. She lives up in Anacortes, and I was so happy to have her there to give some healing sessions and give a presentation. And of course, my dear friend Carolyn White and her husband Jerry were there. Carolyn and Jerry are wonderful psychics and aura readers. They do these wonderful aura photographies, and they show the different colors around your aura, and then they top it off with a wonderful reading as well. They're wonderful people, and I was so happy to have them there. And of course, I was there as well. I gave a speech, a conference speech on Friday evening on humanity, on messages from the masters. Messages included from Professor Albert Einstein, President John F. Kennedy, his brother Robert F. Kennedy, Mahatma Gandhi, Nostradamus, as well as some messages from Dr. Emoto and the Galactic Alliance. I gave a good speech, and that information now is written into a book. The book is done. Now I've got to do some more editing on it, and with luck, we'll be sending it off to publishers within the next month or so, and I'll let you know when that'll happen. Our conference last weekend was such a success, I've decided to have another conference next year. Virtually the same dates, March 9, 10, 11, 2018, at the same price in Olympia, Washington. And I hope you can come. For early registrations, the cost will only be $97 for the 3-day event of 50% discount. And if you're interested, just send me an email to outoftheworld1150@gmail.com, or you can call me here in the United States at 509-750-9793 or 1-888-879-8339. I'd like to run down what some of my guests had to say. It was just incredible having all these wonderful people there. Jim Mars is a famous American journalist, and he spoke for about an hour and a half on the influence of secret societies here in the United States and the world. He's written some famous books on the John F. Kennedy assassination, as well as secrecy in governments around the world. And, you know, one thing I like about Jim, his heart's in such a good place. I know that when he speaks, I can tell he's sincere and he tells the truth whenever he can. And for that reason alone, I so enjoyed having him. The only thing I regret is that he had so much to say, I wish I could have given him several more hours to talk, because he could have easily filled up 3 or 4 hours with everything he had to say. But he's a wonderful man, and I'm so glad he could come. My good friend Scott Lemriel was there. He's been in contact, both telepathically and face-to-face, physical contact, with members of what's called a benevolent group called the Galactic Alliance. The Galactic Alliance, he tells me, is an alliance of approximately 450 million planets in this one-third of the Milky Way galaxy, of which the Earth is in that area. And they number approximately 7 trillion entities. Now, those are huge numbers to get your head around. But from what I've learned from him, and also he put me in touch with the Galactics and Ambassador Twellian several years ago, they're here, they're benevolent, and they are trying everything they can to help us from behind the scenes. They also say that we have a very bright and beautiful future ahead of us, too. And so if you hear about doom and gloom on other news outlets, or don't get too discouraged, because I know that there's good times ahead of us, and I know they're here to help us. And actually, it was funny because at the conference site just a couple of days ago, I saw, what was it? I think I saw 4 or 5 different UFO craft from the Galactic Alliance. They're very distinctive. There's like 5 dots in a white dots in a round shape with a larger bright light in the middle of it. There were two. There's a husband and wife team who was the main craft there at the conference area. And for those who traveled from far away to come to the conference, including those from Switzerland and Taiwan, of course, they were all protected on their way home. And that's what I was told. And it's wonderful to have that kind of protection. I know that when I flew to Montreal last year for a conference, I looked out the window of my airplane as I was flying to Montreal, and I could actually see the spacecraft. It's funny because I told I told one of the stewardesses, that stewards on the flight, that there was a UFO following, protecting us all, and he kind of laughed. I don't think he believed me, but they were out there. You could see them. The other person we had on for about an hour and a half was Simon Parks in England. He's a wonderful man. Simon's soul, he says, is actually one-third human, one-third reptilian, and one-third insectoid, which is basically praying mantis. He was given the choice when he was younger many years ago, whether to go with the reptilians in a negative sense or go with the his human family and the mantis, the insectoids, in a positive, benevolent way. And he's chosen the benevolent way since that time. And he's an amazing man, and I know I'll be having him on again on my show soon. The other person I had on was Tony Rodriguez. Tony has a very interesting story. It's kind of a long story. He was abducted by some greys on behalf of the reptilians way back in 1981, one night in his bedroom at a farm in Michigan. And he was forced into this secret space program. And the stories he had to tell were just amazing. One of it was living on Ceres, C-E-R-E-S, which is an asteroid in the asteroid belt in the solar system, just beyond Mars. It's actually the remnants, he says, of a planet Marduk, which was a huge Earth-like planet that was destroyed in a war with the reptilians, between the reptilians and the Galactic Alliance, 500,000 years ago. And this asteroid is 528 miles long. At the time he lived there, there was a breakaway colony of German Nazis who had escaped from planet Earth with the help of the reptilians and established their own isolated society. He said that all the humans on this asteroid spoke German, and they had little translator boxes that where you could understand English. And they also had a program where they abducted people from this planet, forced them into working for them for 20 years as a way of time travel. And then when they were completely done with their work there on this asteroid belt, they would force them back through time and age regress them back to the same time where they abducted them. So it's a kind of a hard thing to wrap your mind around. One of the things that Tony said is that they always try to do a mind wipe. They wipe out your memory. But he remembered much of it, and through therapy has gotten so many details of what happened to him during this 20-year period. But I really like Tony. He's a genuine man, and I could tell he wasn't making any of this up. Seiichiro Yoshinushi, I hope I got that. Michiko, did I pronounce that correctly, or did I make him?
Seiichiro Yoshinouchi.
Okay, good. I'm so glad you took the words right out of my mouth. Since you were there and you translated for Seiichiro, would you explain? He also gave 2 days of Hado sessions,
right,
on instruction on March 14th and 15th.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I've asked Seiichiro back again next year. I hope he can come back.
I hope so, too.
Yeah, I hope he can come back. And could you tell me a little bit about these Hado machines? They are incredible machines.
It really is. Well, actually, that was something that Dr. Emoto was originally using, had the five-digit codes called Hado codes. And Seiichiro, or Mr. Yoshi, discovered that every code had five-digit numbers, and he wanted to know what they were and how they came from. So he kept doing research on what they were, and found out that they had the law of the universe, or he calls it the law of the Kazutama, and that number, God exists in numbers. And so he made a magic square from that. And all the magics, the number Hado codes are in this machine, and heals people. It finds out the cause of the problem that every people have, and adjusts the vibration of the cause of the disease we have.
I have to tell you, I was having a very interesting conversation with Carolyn White, mm-hmm, after the conference,
mm-hmm,
and she said those five-digit numbers actually correspond to five different Chinese elements of the planet: water, earth, fire. I can't remember all of them, but there were five elements.
The five elements in China are a little different from ours here.
I see.
Yeah.
Okay.
But yeah, five elements,
okay,
in China.
Okay.
Yeah.
Fascinating. The other thing, too, is that when they did their, they were balancing, what these machines do is balance a person's energy.
Right. And then what it does is it scans everyone's vibrational imbalance or vibration in each code on the physical body, also the fourth dimensional field, fifth dimension, and also spiral way. Mm-hmm. So that's something that it's not only the physical body, but because the cause of the diseases that we have a lot of times come from the past life or parents' karma, negative karma.
Mm-hmm. Well, one of the fascinating things that I saw during his demonstrations was that you could actually set the machine to what they would do is take a bottle of water. And then they would infuse the correct vibration in that bottle of water to help balance the energy and make you feel better for any physical or spiritual condition.
Exactly, yeah.
And one of the fascinating things that I saw there was that you could actually select third dimension, fourth dimension, fifth dimension, or a spiral of other dimensions.
Mm-hmm.
And this is where I think you know, I know our medical doctors here in this country and around the world do their best to try to treat patients. Mm-hmm. And I think it's safe to say, you know, all of them try with a good heart to try to help people.
Right.
But they're limited in the sense that it's third dimension medical practice. And this, I'm not saying the Hados are doing medical practice, but what I'm saying is that they're balancing the energy for people mm-hmm. beyond this dimension. And because of that, they're very effective.
When we have any kind of problem, for example, the emotions come from the memory or emotions that we're storing within us are stored in our subconscious level.
Right.
And that's affecting our physical body.
Right, exactly. Well, I don't want to get too much into this now because we'll have time to talk about it later.
Okay.
But I just wanted to mention that briefly. Of course, we'll talk about your work, too, in the next hour. Jerry Pollock. Now, Master Lin is a famous psychic and a medium from Taiwan.
Mm-hmm.
He's very well known in Asia, and I'm so happy he came to the conference.
Me too. He's a wonderful man.
A good man, a good heart person. He'll be coming on my radio station the next couple of weeks.
Wonderful.
James Math was there. I really like him. Pristina Water Company. Alfred Labermart Weber was there by telephone. A wonderful man. Now, Emma Louise Hansen is an interesting person because she is actually from Andromeda. And she showed me pictures of how the UFOs were following her
here.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, absolutely. And that was amazing. Her friend that was there was Lasse Sarnhut.
Mm-hmm. From Sweden?
From Sweden, uh-huh. Yeah. He was an interesting fellow because, you know, I know there's so many talented people around the world who are in touch with all kinds of different entities and benevolent entities, and it was so nice to have his input here.
Right.
Because
we don't hear anything.
Don't hear a word of that. Mm. And so for those of you listening around the world, if you have had contact with benevolent extraterrestrials, please send me an email. I'd love to have you on my program. My phone number is 509-750-9793, my telephone number here in the United States, or you can just send me an email to outofthisworld1150@gmail.com. The other person, of course, was Robbie Holtz, a fantastic Aboriginal healer. She's very, she was able to help a lot of people there during the conference, and I'm so happy she came. Of course, Billy Woodard came, and one of the things he gave a channeled lecture of his father, Zora, during the conference. And one of the amazing things he said that the people beneath Mount Shasta had rerouted the water. Were you there, Michiko, when he talked about this? You were doing another session. Okay. Well, he said that the people beneath Mount Shasta, the Talusians there, had rerouted the water that feed into the springs for the Sacramento River right at Mount Shasta, and they've added an element that's anti-cancer. In the water.
Wow.
And if you analyze the water, he said that you'll find this element and it'll stop cancer.
Wow.
And he said that there are actually several laboratories right now testing the water.
Oh.
For
really?
That element.
That's good.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
For that element. So I just wanted to let you know he had some incredible things to say. He said that we are on an ascending path and that we are rapidly advancing into the fifth dimension. And it's just a matter of time. Actually, one of the things that that Carolyn White talked about is that for many decades, the what's called the Hertz level of the planet, the vibrational field, was only at 7.8 Hertz.
That's Schumann.
The Schumann resonance.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then last Christmas, it went up to 13.6 or 13.8, almost doubled. And then just after the first of the year, it went up to 40. No, it went up to 36.
Yeah.
Then it dropped down to 32, and last week it was at 40. And we are rapidly advancing into the higher dimensions.
Mm-hmm.
We have our wonderful friend Jerry Pollock on the phone. I want to bring him on in about 5 seconds. But I just want to tell everyone we will be having another conference next year. And for those who missed today, the conference last weekend, we've got the videos will be ready here very, very soon. For $97, you can watch the entire conference in the privacy of your own home, or you can also watch the videos from our 2016 conference too, which was pretty amazing. And with that, I'd like to bring on my good friend, Professor Jerry Pollack of the University of Washington. Jerry, how are you doing today?
I'm okay, Ted. How are you doing?
Oh, I'm fine.
It was a great conference that you had.
Oh, thank you, Jerry. I'm so happy you could come.
Well, even for half a day, it was worth it. Such a wonderfully stimulating atmosphere. I enjoyed it a whole lot.
Oh, I'm so glad. I'm so glad, Jerry. You know, I received a lot of emails after the conference, and we also passed out sheets to people as well, asking people what I could do, what did you like and didn't like, and maybe things I could improve about the conference. And even people, like, we had some problems with Skype, of course, which is kind of unavoidable sometimes when you're using Skype on the internet. But other than that, everyone really enjoyed it, and they all said they will be coming back next year again, which made me feel really good.
Oh, that's wonderful. Ted, can I just start by asking a question? I thought the Schumann resonance had something that you just mentioned a few minutes ago before
right.
I came on.
Right.
And I thought the Schumann resonance had something to do with the distance between the Earth's surface and mm-hmm. and the ionosphere beyond, or maybe that's wrong. But I don't understand why it should change so radically from, I thought the 7.8 hertz was something that was calculated based on those distances. And why, does anybody know why it would shift so dramatically from 7.8 all the way up to, say, I think you mentioned up to 40 hertz?
40 as of last week, yeah. Michiko's here in the studio with me. I know she wants to say hi to you.
Hi, Michiko.
Hi, Jerry.
How are you? Yeah.
Thank you.
Okay.
Oh, it was very nice to be with you at the conference. To be very honest with you, I don't know how it changed. I was kind of curious about that, too, because people started to say that it went higher. And then what I saw, it's just the wave that someone was showing me, from the website that was showing the Schumann wave.
Well, here's what I know, and it's secondhand. I haven't measured the wave myself, but this is what I know. I know that beginning in September, this frequency, a Schumann frequency or whatever it is for the planet, started creeping up, going up. And also, too, science were very puzzled. I've got a section. I've written this in my new book that'll be coming out soon, Jerry. But they started seeing these high energy patterns coming from the central sun of this universe hitting planet Earth. It was actually hitting the entire solar system, and what's that old saying? A rising tide lifts all boats. Well, the energy field that's being hit is being directed, I've been told, by the Supreme Being, the entity that created all of this in this hologram. And so they're raising our vibration. Actually, the vibrations of planet Earth are raising to very, very high rates, and it's going to continue. Watch. This is, they tell me now that you ain't seen nothing yet. it's going to go much, much higher. But what that means is that for people like yourself who are doing wonderful work in the fourth phase of water, you're basically going into other dimensions. You've also got a tremendously pure heart who genuinely wants to help the world, make it a better place and the planet, and help people. You're going to get the funding that you need and the support you need to do more and more work in the future. I can see that happening.
Well, thank you for your optimism, Ted. I really appreciate that. Getting funding for scientific work is any kind is getting increasingly difficult, and President Trump announced, for example, a cut of the budget of the National Institutes of Health by I think 18%.
And
if it really comes true, it's devastating because the NIH usually funds projects for 3 to 5 years, and so once they decide to fund someone, they're obligated to pay for 3 or 5 years. And what that means is that the impact of that cut comes on any mm-hmm. new grant, because they don't have money to fund new grants since they're obliged to fund the grants that are running, second year, third year, whatever. So this could have a devastating impact on health research, but even more so, you know, as you know, Ted and Michiko, if you're doing research or work that that challenges the prevailing view, the mainstream view. It becomes even harder to get funding because the people who review the proposals that you send into these organizations are the people you're challenging. So the analogy I like is someone who comes along and says, "Well, the Earth is round," and everybody knows that the Earth is flat. You see? So,
I know. I'm hearing it these days too.
You're hearing it, yeah. Right. Well, I don't actually mean the new point of view about flat Earth. I mean, let's say previous to that view, this is a kind of generality that if everybody around you, all the scientists, have concluded that the Earth is flat based on whatever evidence they want, and you come upon new evidence that that the Earth is round. You've seen satellite pictures, and if you fly from Tokyo, for example, if you fly east to Seattle and keep going east through Europe, you can come back to Tokyo. And as you fly, you can't notice, if you look down, that the Earth has a sharp edge.
Right.
You know, so and then you go to one of the granting agencies and you say, "Hey, all you guys believe that the Earth is flat, but I've got some evidence that the Earth is round. Please, could you give me some money? Because it's really important to study this." And so the response of the gatekeeper at the funding organization is, "Oh, this looks pretty interesting. We should get the experts on the shape of the Earth to take a look at this radical proposal." Mm-hmm. And so they recruit the experts. Who are the experts? Well, they're the flat Earth people, and so you have a round Earth proposal is being judged by a flat Earth reviewer.
Right. I see your
point. And the last thing that they want is for you to get money, because if you get money, you'll continue to challenge their point of view.
Exactly.
Well, here's a message I'd love to give to you, Jerry, and I know that I think there's a lot of private support out there for your work. And Jerry's famous. Actually, I think people know you better abroad than they do here in the United States.
Well, maybe, yeah.
Yeah, you know, but you see, one of the things that you've, what I was going to say, and then I want to go a little bit about your work, is that I think there's a lot of support out there for you. And even if President Trump does cut this funding, I think there's still a tremendous amount of money out there for you, irregardless of what the government does.
I think, Ted,
in many ways,
the thing is that Dr. Emoto was told that he will be funded by some people tremendously, and the fact was we could not reach to those people. We didn't know who could do that, and the reality was it was difficult, and that's the reality too.
Well, you know me, I'm a very positive man.
Oh, I know that.
And you know, you look at Fukushima, and I have to ask, are any of the world's governments doing anything about Fukushima? And the answer is no, absolutely nothing. So that's why I'm doing prayers with Michiko next hour, and I know that the Galactic Alliance has stepped in to help clean up the Pacific and Fukushima as well. I mean, Fukushima was four times worse than Chernobyl.
And
many more people should have died, but they haven't. And so I think government in many ways has become, the term that I get is irrelevant. I mean, seriously, I mean, I've seen some of the projects that NIH has funded in the past, and some of them have not been very worthy. But you're right, Jerry. You do threaten the status quo with your wonderful new revolutionary ideas.
Mm-hmm. But thank you for the words revolutionary and wonderful. I think we do have something that's centrally important for all of science and physics and chemistry, and that is what you mentioned, the fourth phase.
Of water.
You know, the idea that water has three phases. We all grew up with three phases. Solid,
you know,
liquid, vapor. Go ahead, Michiko.
Well, I think that even UNESCO is the government, or UNESCO, United Nations, has started to focus on or paying attention, such a strong attention to water memory. It shows how important water research is, and with your fourth phase of water research, that, and you found out that the infrared is creating the immense fourth phase of water, and that it has negative charge and positive charge, and water itself can make electrical charge also, and all that. I mean, when people learn about it, I think that's a revolutionary issue, and you should be able to get fund, and the government should be able to.
If the government doesn't step up to the plate, fine. There's plenty of people out there in the private world who would love to support your work. And one of the things I want to mention to you, Jerry, I think you're right on that water has memory. And the reason I say that is that there's a gentleman from Argentina who's going to be seeing me in May named Matias Di Stefano. I think that's how I correct.
Oh, he's coming in May?
He's actually, I just got a note from him.
Oh.
He's coming in May to Seattle. And I'd like to set up a meeting with him. He's a young man, about 29 or 30, but he's got
29.
Detailed, vivid memories of living in Atlantis thousands of years ago. And one of the things he says is that water was used as a medium of storage in Atlantis, and they also used water they made organic water-based computers.
They did.
And this is the message I got from Professor Albert Einstein for you last year, that they actually to add another molecule, it's not H2O, but it's like H2O2. Add another molecule to, it's like easy water, and then you can use that as a storage device. It's far more efficient than using any kind of metal-based circuitry boards.
Well, this is so interesting because, I mean, I've been talking about, I think you mean
H3O2. H3O2, that's correct, yeah.
Yeah, because the H3O2, this fourth phase of water.
That's right. It's
kind of almost like a solid. In fact, it's been solidified at room temperature. There was just a new paper that appeared in our journal, which is called Water, today, by Vittorio Elia and colleagues from Naples. And they've been able successfully to take easy water and get rid of all loose water molecules and such, and they got a solid out of it, and you could feel the solid. It's kind of a fragile thread like, but it's water. It's a kind of water at room temperature, and the beauty of it is that it consists of molecules, oxygens and hydrogens, that are regularly arrayed in three dimensions and very tightly packed, just like a computer memory, like a thumb drive, you see, and there are two wonderful features that make it just right for storage of information. Number one is that the packing density is really high, so you got a lot of information. And second, the oxygens can take on not two different states, like a zero and a one, that's characteristic of a typical computer memory, but five of them. So it's minus two. The oxygens can take on oxidation states, minus two, minus one, zero, plus one, and plus two. Mm-hmm. So the capacity for memory, as Matias is talking about, is absolutely astonishing. Mm-hmm. And
that's right.
Perhaps it's already been used, as he suggests. But I think it's definitely worth exploring understanding how this can be the basis for memory. There's so many experiments now that have been done by various groups that demonstrate that water actually does have memory. Not only the Emoto experiments, which you guys know about very well, but also others who are using it in terms of physical memory storage or biological, medical, etc. And in our conference that we organize on water each year in Bulgaria, it'll be late October. Mm-hmm. Usually, at each conference each year, there are two or three or four people who are reporting experiments that demonstrate so clearly that water has memory, and it's a kind of revolution in thinking. Perhaps the ancients knew about it, but in modern-day science, this is something that is virtually unknown among orthodox scientists, and if they hear about it, it's largely shunned by them.
That's the problem, you see, and that's you know how much this idea could be worth to humanity?
Oh, yeah.
Incalculable, enormous, billions, trillions, millions, beyond. There's no way to calculate it. And but why don't we, if you'd like, well, of course, we keep in touch, and I'll let you know when Matthias is in town.
Oh, yeah, that would be interesting.
And I could bring in Professor Albert Einstein, because he wants to talk to you some more, and we'll give you ideas that you can use in your lab. And maybe then NIH might get interested at that
well,
point.
I think if I tell the NIH reviewers that I've been in touch with Albert Einstein, I think I would be turned down instantly, even before it gets reviewed.
Well, that's okay. We'll find private sources instead.
Yeah.
I think government in many ways is getting irrelevant, increasingly irrelevant, especially when disasters like Fukushima hit and they don't do anything, nothing. Nothing about it at all.
But to me, this fund for the institute or faculty or research center is really important, and that really changes the world and makes evolution being helpful for all the human beings. And I think we really need to find the way to get some funds for the institute.
Well, thank you,
Michiko.
I'm glad you mentioned. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, this what you're talking about is the Institute for Venture Science, IVSci.org, and this is, in a sense, is kind of distinct from my own or our own research on water. This we're talking about research on every aspect of science, from consciousness to the structure of the atom to you name it. And the idea behind this institute is that there are a lot of ideas out there that challenge conventional thinking in every scientific field. And the people who have these ideas, they really have a great deal of difficulty getting those ideas to see the light of day.
Sure.
It's really challenging for the reasons we talked about a moment ago, that the people who review their proposals to fund their research, they don't want them to succeed because if they succeed, then it challenges the belief system of the reviewers.
That's
and these
right.
reviewers like their belief system. They stand by it. They've
exactly.
lived with it intimately for years.
That's why we have to find the private...
Private funding.
Funding, yeah.
When you were on my show last year, Jerry, I want to make this just a real quick point. Dr. Omoto found back in 1999 that if you took a bottle of radioactive water from a nuclear reactor in Japan and he wrote the words love and gratitude on the bottle along with water crystals, beautiful love and gratitude crystals, that within 48 hours the radiation was completely gone.
I didn't know about that.
That's,
and I can send that to you.
That was at the level of... water crystal level.
Water crystal level is all gone.
But it has to have scientific evidence.
He was able to do it way back then. And so I remember we talked about this last year, and I'll send you the blog. I'll send you the references later today. But what's fascinating, I remember we talked about this last year. Let's say something like that does work. Well, do you think if we approach this government scientist at Hanford to clean up the nuclear waste storage over there in eastern Washington and told them that all they have to do is write love and gratitude on the reactors and put these water crystal photographs on the storage on the reactors over there, that would work to clean it up? I think it does work. Dr. Omoto proved it scientifically decades ago. But the only problem with that is that many of the scientists over there, for example, are, I don't want to call them eggheads, but they're kind of stuck in their own kind of blinders with only looking a certain way. I mean, and unfortunately, they're the problem as far as getting innovations going for new technology for the United States.
Yeah, I hear you on that. I'm so with you. It's sort of like a political belief system. You know, you have conservatives and liberals, and whichever side you're on, you like to listen to people who reinforce your point of view, and you don't want to hear the other side because it's disruptive of your feeling of security. So we shun the other side. We don't listen, even though the other side may have some reasonable points to convey. We don't like to do it. It's human nature, and so it's the same with scientists. They've grown up on certain paradigms. They feel comfortable with those paradigms. They teach those paradigms to their students. They talk about those paradigms with their colleagues. And they don't like to be disrupted because it's uncomfortable to be that way. And also, from practical reasons, you know, many academic scientists, they get their bread and butter from the grants.
Exactly.
So I'm supported at the University of Washington by the School of Medicine. They pay my salary, and if someone comes around and like myself, for example, and suggests that some of the paradigms that that they believe in are not true, they feel most uncomfortable about that. And
So, yes,
it's universal, and that is one of the reasons for the Institute for Venture Science, because those are exactly the kinds of ideas and projects that that interest us, the ones that are, well, you might call them out of the box or out of the mainstream, that challenge conventional views. And what we do is we vet them very thoroughly. We've just gone through 200 of pre-proposals. That is, they tell us roughly what they want to do and why it's important, and this is reviewed by open-minded reviewers, seasoned investigators who are chosen because they're particularly open-minded, and we don't let people in the same field review them. People outside, so they don't care whether the Earth is round or the Earth is flat. They can just understand the arguments, and then we're about to choose perhaps 10 or 12 of those and invite them to produce full proposals that describe in greater detail. And the first thing we do is we send it to their opponents. And, of course, the people they're challenging are going, we can anticipate their kinds of responses. You know, this is the biggest bullshit in the world, or et cetera, et cetera. But then the applicant has a chance to defend his or herself. And we have a series of 3, 4, 5 open-minded reviewers listening to both sides of the debate.
Sure.
And if the applicant can defend their point of view, then they get a high score. If they can't, they don't get a high score. And and so we hope to be able to fund these people, and our ability to fund depends on how much money is donated to the Institute for Venture Science.
Right.
Let's start.
Well, to me, it's almost like people who are convenient for those people who are. People who are convenient will be accepted. People who are not convenient or inconvenient will not be accepted. So
that's great. Jerry, what's your website? So if people want to make a contribution to your wonderful institute, how can they do that?
Thanks. It's www.i, as in institute, V as in venture, sci as in science, IVSCI.org.
Okay, that's easy.
That's simple. And the website contains a lot of information. It's actually under renovation because I've been told that the website is designed mostly for scientists to look at. It's got a lot of information, but not well designed for the general public and for donors. So we're working on that right now.
Okay, good.
We're excited about prospects because this is what can create scientific revolutions. We have a little, I wouldn't say trick, but here, one of the major features of this is that if we fund you, Michiko, for your round Earth idea, we know what's going to happen. You'll take our money, you'll do some research, and probably your paradigm or your proposal will be reinforced with positive data.
Exactly.
So what's that going to do? Well, the flat Earth people, their reaction is not going to be, this really looks good. Michiko's got some pretty good stuff there. We're going to change our mind. No, it's not going to be that. It's going to be that they're going to dig their heels in even more firmly. And it's going to be, it has been in the past, ad hominem attacks. Like, oh, she's a nutcake. She doesn't have a clue what she's talking about. Send her back to Tokyo.
Right.
You know, something.
Sorry.
Yeah. So we understand that that's going to happen because that has happened in the past. It happens almost every time.
But it has to be changed.
Well, yeah. And so the way we're going to get it is if we decide to fund your round or radical round Earth proposal, we're going to look for another 10, 12 laboratories around the world who are semi-independent of you. They're doing it, but they think there's something to this round Earth idea. We're going to fund them too. So next year at the annual meeting of the Shape of the Earth Society, there are going to be 10 laboratories, one from Tokyo, one from Beijing, one from Seattle, one from Argentina, et cetera. And they're all reporting that using each one, using a different method, that, hey, it looks like the Earth is round. Mm-hmm. Now, they can't avoid paying attention to that, because especially the young people who come from the Flat Earth laboratories, they're going to go to their professor and say, hey, you know, what's going on here? We all know the Earth is flat, but a dozen different laboratories are reporting that it's round. And pretty soon, that's going to precipitate, inevitably, a revolution in thinking. And this is a scientific revolution. We haven't had we had a lot of technological revolutions in the past decades, but it's really hard to think of a scientific revolution, one that's changed the world in the same way as, for example, the structure of DNA or the splitting of the atom. It's really hard to identify anything like that in the past 20 or 30 years. And this is what we want to achieve. We want to bring new revolutions, because they're out there, and it's just that they've been suppressed, and we need them to spring to life, see if really they have the goods. And if they do, then that's a revolution. And if we have revolutions, every breakthrough in science, if you look in the past, it always come forth with new technologies that you could never, ever imagine before, that have changed the world. So, you know, like the physicists and engineers at Bell Laboratories 60 years ago were fiddling with semiconductor materials, and they noticed that with some impurities, they had some kind of interesting results, and that resulted in diodes and then transistors and then integrated circuits. And finally today, everything we use, even the telephone that we're using for communication, and the laptop and the digital cameras, everything came from that. So nobody could ever have predicted 60 or 70 years ago that this would happen. But it happens from some of these discoveries, and like the discovery of penicillin that eventually led to the pharmaceutical industry that we have today. Not that all of us favor what's happening with that industry, but the point is that fundamental discoveries almost always lead to new technologies that change the world in ways that we could never predict ahead of time. That's what we're after. If we want to solve the world's problems, this is the way to do it, I think. There are, of course, political aspects to that, but scientific ones as well. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So we're hoping that identify people who, you know, people of means who would like to give back something to society in a way, a tangible way, that where they can actually see the fruits of their investment probably within a few years, because these revolutions will occur quickly when enough laboratories are pursuing the same thing and get the same result, the same revolutionary result. It happens quickly, and maybe even overnight with the Internet, you know, it's able to trigger political revolutions practically overnight, and probably scientific revolutions in a time frame that's not too different. So people who invest or who donate can see the fruits of their investment right away. You know, a lot of people donate money to the American Heart Association or cancer or whatever, and, you know, there's progress, but these subjects or issues have been pursued for, I think, President Nixon declared the war on cancer 40-odd years ago, and the war has not been won.
Well, you know, I have to tell you quickly about that, because Nixon was offered technology several times in the 50s while he was vice president that could have completely eliminated cancer, but he chose not to accept it because he had friends in the medical establishment who were earning a lot of money off cancer research, and he didn't want them to lose their jobs.
I hear you. It makes total sense. There are many, many examples following what you said. At the financial interest of the stakeholders is overwhelming. It's so dominant, and it really is holding back genuine progress.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
So that's a big issue that needs to be tackled.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, you know, Jerry, I've loved having you on today, my friend, and thank you so much for coming on today. You're doing wonderful work, Jerry, and your website again is www.ivsci.org. And please stay tuned for my next hour with Michiko Hayashi talking about water. Thank you so much, Jerry. Bye-bye.